Hello, this is Yaro Starek, and welcome to another interview with an expert. Today on the line, I have with me Jeff Barson. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Yaro.
Now, Jeff has been in touch with me for, I think, a long time, actually, Jeff. I'm not sure when you first got on my radar. Maybe you can help me. What were we talking?
Well, you know, one time I was writing initially years ago when you owned Entrepreneurs, not Entrepreneurs Journey. What was the small business blog? Small Business Branding. I was guest writing on there for a few months, and I think that was our first kind of connection.
Okay. So that's at least 4 years ago, I'd say, by now. Yeah. Okay.
Probably something like that, yeah.
Now, Jeff comes from a medical background, which has parlayed into all kinds of entrepreneurial endeavors, which is what we're here to talk about today. Thankfully, I don't know the full story about Jeff yet, which is fantastic for doing an interview, because I'm going to learn just as much about Jeff as the listeners will at the same time. However, I do know that Jeff has got some very successful membership sites and websites on the internet, as well as some offline business success in, obviously, a massive industry. So I'm looking forward to learning more about that, Jeff. Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your personal background. Like, did you obviously you studied something at university to become what you are today? Maybe you could take us back to that point.
Well, I did. I was actually an art major. So I was, for most of the 90s, a professional artist living in New York City. I was a realist painter. And I had clients that ranged from most of the publishers in North America through Warner Brothers, and did paintings and had galleries and agents around the country. And to be honest, art is a terrible, terrible business model. One where you produce all of your content that takes potentially, in my case, months. And then, you know, especially if you're talking about gallery paintings, then you're attempting to find people to purchase that. So I was successful at it, fortunately, and I retired. My goal was that I was going to retire. I bought a house in Park City, Utah, and moved out here where I still live in order to kind of ski during the day, and I was going to kind of grow a beard and paint at night and, you know, do that kind of thing. But through happenstance, I started a medical company. I saw an opportunity, and so I stopped my art career.
How can an artist suddenly become interested in a medical career?
Well, at one time I was a pre-med major too. So I had a double major, and I was a pre-med major and an art major. And then one of my professors basically kind of pulled me aside, an art professor in this case, and said, do you know how many doctors there are in the United States? And do you know how many good artists there are? And don't you think you would be best, don't you want to do something, that's going to make an impact, is basically what he told me. So I dropped my pre-med major and, focused on art. And then I moved after I did not graduate. I left 7 credits short, but then moved to Boston and then to Manhattan, which is the center of the art world. And, kind of started doing that. I was fortunate in that I was never one who had either a lack of, I never thought that I couldn't do almost anything, which has served me well, because I think that most people think, are surprised that they have success. I've always just kind of expected to be able to do things. And fortunately, those kind of things. I think it has a lot to do with my upbringing. When I was a child, we moved to Europe, and I grew up a fair amount of my life, well, 3 formative years in England, and went to a Beechwood Park Preparatory School for Boys, and I was the only American there. And so the environment was conducive to me learning to act on my own. I don't know how best to put it that way, but other kind of family, things allowed me the support that I knew that I could just kind of go do anything, and kind of had a safety net in a lot of ways, at least emotionally and with family kind of support when I was a child. And so when I decided I was going to be an artist, I was probably about 13, and I said, okay, the first thing I'm going to do is go get a scholarship. And so I, applied, and there was one school, and it happened to be in my state, that I wanted to go to. And at the time in the 80s, it had one of the better illustration programs in the country, probably, you know, one of the top three schools in the country, really wanted to go there. So I went there. And, you know, art, if you are an artist, and I used to teach this to university students, if you're an artist, the level of competition that you are going to face is unlike of just about any other level of competition. It is, you know, everybody who goes to art school in at the university level was the best artist in their local school district and some other kinds of things. But art is not valued the same way that, you know, finance is valued or other things. It's very difficult to make a living as an artist. And it's even more difficult to make a lot of money as an artist. You know, so I learned, in effect, that art is very kind of entrepreneurial, and I was always just better at the business aspects of it and kind of seemed to have a sense for certain things that other artist friends of mine didn't really have. And so I had a fair amount of success that way. I mean,
what's the distinction there? Is it just the case you know how to sell your art?
Well, I'll tell you what the distinction is that the only criteria that you are valued upon as an artist is your ability to execute on a couple different levels. Now, some of those are social levels. Some of those are other, you know, kind of levels. But the predominant one is it depends. It is entirely a meritocracy. If you are, you know, deaf, dumb, and blind, but you can still paint better than somebody else, you will be able to, you know, have success. Now, you know, there are anomalies with that, and there are kind of cliches about that, and some of those hold true. I mean, it is the case that everybody, and literally everybody, actually wants to be an artist. I don't know of anybody who doesn't want to be an artist, because being an artist has a certain kind of sense in their mind about, okay, I get to wear a beret, I get to go around and do things that other people don't want to do. I have kind of social capital that I can spend in various ways. All of that is very true. But most people don't want to actually do the art, because if you are an artist, your life is spent at 2 o'clock in the morning in a dark room by yourself. And that is where art is done. It doesn't, you know, there is a couple fun times around, okay, before you start a painting or start some kind of artistic endeavor, and then when it is done and everybody's telling you how wonderful it is, and there are things around gallery openings and other things that are fun. But most of the time is spent at 2 o'clock in the morning in a dark room by yourself. That is the lie. If you kind of add it up, that's 98% of what an artist does. And most people, and the reason there are so many shitty artists is because everybody falls in love with the first part because it's the fun part, and nobody, you know, really likes painting leaves or, you know, something else that is tedious.
Doing the work, in other words.
Yeah, doing the actual work, you know. And there are no barriers to entry. Anybody can do it, and it is all judged on merit as well as, you know, there are some other kinds of things. And we don't really want to, I'd be happy to talk about the art world because that gets me really animated.
I just have one more question regarding the art before we move on to the more present day stuff. I'm very curious about this. Now, okay, so obviously you were different a little bit in the sense that you're willing to do the work, which is, as a criteria for an entrepreneur, probably the most important criteria as well. So this is always a pattern that, you know, is in every industry, I believe. But there's got to be more to it in terms of selling your paintings as well, or is it a case of
there's a tremendous amount of things that you learn as a successful artist that help you in every other kind of business. I'll drop a couple of kind of cliches about that. There's a saying in the art world, the big work sells little work. And that means that if I have, and my work is pretty expensive, although I don't have any more to sell, I've sold it all long ago. So my work would range from about, for a gallery painting, from about $12,000 up to about $60,000. And this is, you know, 1997, 98, that kind of time. Now,
how can you do that? Where do you get that number from?
You make it up. It's what the market will bear. You know, there are only two things that determine price, and the price is where these two things meet: what you're willing to sell something for and what somebody's willing to buy it for. Those are the only two things, you know. And now, you know, so if, you know, all art is in effect sold this way. So I would say, well, I will sell this for $60,000. And I would wait until somebody would come along and their line would cross mine and they say, well, I will buy that for $60,000.
That sounds awfully scary for people who have confidence that they can sell this for $60,000.
Well, and,
believe that from day one, like until you sold a painting at $60,000, it's pure faith, right? That you're.
Well, you don't just say that because nobody else's line will cross that until. As an example, big work sells little work. So if I have a gallery show and I have 12 paintings there and they're each $1,200, I might sell six or eight of those. If I have another painting there that's $60,000, I'm going to sell all the little paintings because in the prospect's mind, they're looking and saying, okay, I'm going to spend $1,200 or $12,000, but the artwork that I am buying is from an artist who sells his paintings at $60,000. Is that making sense? So you will put a big painting or some expensive things in order to sell the stuff. Now, online, you tend to see that a lot with, okay, here's the, you know, I have this ultimate package and it's $3,000, but you can get in at this low level of $299 or $29.99, whatever it might be. And the reason that is done is for exactly that same kind of purpose.
It makes the medium price look more attractive. And
it makes them look reasonable, you know, that you're getting the content from somebody who sells his, you know, and everybody, especially if you're looking at like how to make money online, that is kind of rife with the, hey, I spend, you know, my time is worth $12,000 and, but you can, you know, get it for $299 or whatever the kind of medium price is, you tend to move more of those. I mean, there's all sorts of things from the art world that actually kind of translate directly into business because it is, you know, not necessarily personality driven, but it is psychologically driven by what you are doing to instill in the buyer's mind that this is a good purchase for them. Because, you know, brass tacks, especially if you're dealing with things around art, it all has to do with desire and none of it has to do with need. You know, there's nobody's, you know, it's not like medicine in one of the areas that I kind of deal with where, okay, my spleen is shutting down. I need to, that's a need. Okay. I've got to get something to get this fixed. I want something nice to hang on my wall is definitely a want. And so you have to get really good at, if you're going to be very successful at this, about managing those types of things because people buy art, you know, or desired things, and they will spend money on those. But you have to hit the right triggers.
Okay. So that's
anyway.
Clearly a natural playground for you to learn about business to then begin what you do in medicine, obviously. Perhaps not, but there's a connection here. So you were studying medicine and then a business opportunity opened.
Yeah, so I basically retired and I moved out to Park City, bought a place out here, and I was going to, you know, go snowboarding during the day, and I have a hot tub, and whoever I met on the board, you know, the slopes, they wanted to come back and, you know, it was going to be my life of leisure kind of thing. And I'd still be painting was the idea. And I ran across a opportunity, which was that I had a family member who was a physician. And he was trying to open up a cosmetic clinic. He was not in cosmetic medicine really at the time. He was just starting this. And he was doing terribly at it. And in effect, asked for my help in a couple of ways. I mean, he thought he needed marketing and some other kinds of things. And I'd always been around working for agencies and have been in advertising and marketing and stuff as well for a long time. And in looking at what he was doing, I realized that there was much more of an opportunity here, that what he really needed was much more business acumen, as well as driving patient flow and operational procedures and a bunch of other things. Now, of course, I didn't have a background that screamed I was the person to do this, but I did have a fair amount of capital inside of my extended family, and this is an extended family member, where I would go and say, oh, I'm going to go do this, and then I would actually do it. And so I approached this physician in my extended family, and I said, look, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give up my art career, and we're going to start this business, and I will run it, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. Now, to be honest, I don't remember exactly how I put it, but it was persuasive enough that he said, okay. And so I stopped painting. I called up my agents and said, look, I'm going to, you know, not be sending you any more work. Stop sending me jobs, and I'm not going to send you any more stuff. And so we started this medical business. And in the United States, especially this is, it gets a little tricky here around medicine because as a non-physician, you cannot, for example, employ or partner directly with a physician. And so you have to have corporations set up in order to kind of do this in a manageable way. But we started a cosmetic clinic out of his existing clinic, which at the time was doing pain management. And we grew that, well, you know, and in roughly 3 years, I think we had 7 clinics in 4 states. His income went from a full-time physician who was doing pain management. He was probably taking home about $130,000 a year. His clinic was probably doing about $340,000 or something like that with 6 employees. To where he was able to, we had another physician working in that clinic, and he was able to call in sick and do some other things, basically take time off. And his, within 18 months, his income went from $130,000 to about north of $800,000. So everybody's pretty excited about this. And we had opened up other clinics, 4 in this state, and then Tennessee, we had one, West Virginia, Florida. And while I was doing that was just about the time of about 2002, maybe kind of getting in 2003, and I started an online community. I've always kind of been enamored a little bit with technology and stuff as well. And so I started an online medical community for physicians in cosmetic medicine around providing them valuable content in order to have their ear when I needed it. Because as we were opening up these clinics, I wanted to have the ability to go on my own site and say, look, I'm opening up a clinic in this state. Here's the, you know, what we're looking for, and have, you know, 50 or 100 physicians wanting to come work there, you know, that had been following what we were doing and some other things. And so in order to kind of build this community, I was providing valuable content. I mean, I was telling physicians things that they could not get anywhere else because, and I'm speaking specifically about American physicians in this case, but it holds true around the world for the most part. In cosmetic medicine, it is unlike traditional medicine. Cosmetic medicine, and what I'll tell physicians is, this is like opening up a women's retail shoe store inside of your medical practice. The clientele is predominantly women. 93% of every client, you know, of all of your clients is going to be female. They're going to start at about 30 years of age because that's when the dinner bell rings for cosmetic physicians, you know, is at birthdays, you know. Uh-huh. And they are expecting they expect that they're buying outcomes, which is very, very different than traditional medicine, where physicians are selling effort in effect. Where if you're, you know, if you've got cancer, you go to the physician and you hope that they're going to help you and you're willing to pay them for their time. If somebody is going in for a facelift, that's not what their expectation is. And so there's a much different dynamic. Now, the plastic surgeons and the dermatologists who have been fighting over this marketplace, cosmetic medicine, since the 60s, now had a new competitor. And it was brought about by the advent of technology, which allowed medicine to be delivered through a technology platform that used to be delivered only through a manual skill process. So we're moving right now from an environment where a physician who is in cosmetic medicine, say a plastic surgeon, very expensive to train, and he is doing invasive surgical procedures and liposuction and facelifts and that kind of stuff. Now there are technologies developed, things around laser hair removal and IPL treatments, and I can, you know, get rid of UVH spots on the backs of your hands and other things that are not delivered you know, that are delivered through a technology which makes them scalable, replicable, and a lot easier to kind of deliver. And so there's now, instead of just having plastic surgeons and dermatologists, there's now a third leg on this stool, which is these other physicians like we were, who now are using technology to address this market that are not, you know, trained or board certified in surgery, because we're not doing surgery, and are not trained or board certified in dermatology, which is actually the diseases of the skin. You know, the dermatologists, you know, treat a lot of different things, but dermatology as a medical specialty is really around diseases of the skin, not cosmetic treatments. Although that's, you know, so there's been the market's huge. So there's been, and now this technology has entered the market and allows real business practices to take place. The analogy that I often draw is one of the family farm. So in the family farm is kind of going the way of the dodo bird, and rightly so. Now, I come from I grew up, in effect, my grandparents had a family farm and ended up losing that. And so I'm very familiar with how that works. But if you look at it from the market level, it is inefficient, and it is in markets like efficiency. So as technology gets developed, medicine is going to be more technology driven. And so I started this blog at the time. It's more of a community now, and I would tell physicians, here's why you don't want to buy this IPL treatment. Here's how to negotiate. Here's how to compensate your staff. And it was information that physicians can't get anywhere else, because they're all isolated and all in competition with each other, you know. And so we competed as a real business with physicians who were not used to competing at this kind of level. So we advertised in ways that they didn't advertise. We talked to our patients in ways that they did not talk to their patients. We offered treatments that, you know, you couldn't find anywhere else. And we kind of rolled up into the markets where we were, and were very, very kind of successful.
All right, I need one thing explained to me here.
Sure.
The difference, you were talking about cosmetic surgery and dermatologists. I understand those two. But what is the type of treatment here with technology? Like, what is technology?
Sure. So sometimes they'll be called aesthetic physicians. The name of my site is Medical Spa MD. Now, we were by default a medical spa, but we were 100% medical and offered no basically spa treatment. So you would come into one of our clinics and you could get Botox or Restylane, laser hair removal, photofacials, skin tightening treatments, all the kind of technology treatments, and nothing like, you know, massage or aromatherapy or all that kind of stuff. You know, the stuff that you go to a day spa.
So it's non-invasive surgical technique.
Non-invasive surgical, or not non-invasive medical technologies was where we kind of focused in. And so I ended up exiting that business in about 2004, but I still had this community of physicians, and I always liked helping this kind of community. And so I continued to do so. And for a little while, I did kind of consultations with physicians.
Did you write all the content for that site, by the way?
At the time, yes, I was writing all of the content. And almost all the content I still write.
So you're giving business training to cosmetic surgeons, basically.
Well, in effect, yes. And we deal with things that they don't have access to in any other form, because there are no communities around this. And the reason is that the information that a physician has access to has to do with things like trade shows, with publications, trade publications, and those are all run through an advertising revenue model. And when you run information through advertising, it gets filtered. Because if you're going on to into a trade publication or something for dermatologists, that publication cannot say, you know, this technology sucks and this is obviously a better deal and this is, you know, how you want to do that, because they have the person who's paying them, the reason they're making revenue is through advertising, and they cannot give an unbiased kind of filter. So we became a lot more around like the consumer reports of medical technologies. Now, I have to say that we were quite successful with this, and it also irked some people. In fact, I think I'm going through my fourth actual lawsuit right now. Now, some of them did not end up in lawsuits, but you know, I am being sued right now. And basically because somebody, what happened was, this is a little bit interesting and might raises the hair on the back of my neck, I must say. What happened was
the public, remember?
Yeah. So what happened was there was a medical spa franchise. I won't name it, just it's probably on my blog by now already, but there's a medical spa franchise that went out of business. And the reason they went out of business was that their franchisees organized in effect on my site. They would leave comments, and through the information that they had left on the comment, other people would recognize, oh, this person owns a franchise, and they were the franchisor was attempting to kind of keep them all separate and siloed. And so they connected to each other and they started talking about, you know, now through email, they found themselves on my site and then would, you know, post comments and connected to each other through email. And then they basically organized and stopped paying their franchise fee and drove the franchisor into bankruptcy. Now, businesses don't like that. And so they tend to try and sue everybody. And so this time they're suing all of the franchisees, and they kind of named me. Now, they don't make any claims against me other than I'm just a bad, terrible blog, I think they call me, something like that, you know, nasty, bad, terrible blog or something. But as a harassment, they in effect named me to the suit, even though we've not, you know, and it's without merit and some other kinds of things, but it is possible to kind of, especially in the United States, end up in litigation that is less than desirable, especially in medicine. I mean, the U.S. is a very litigious society to start.
It's interesting, though, that it's a legal matter almost more because of the franchising, the business side, not necessarily.
Well, yeah, I have gotten nasty letters, nasty grams from other lawyers because somebody will leave a comment and say, you know, this training program, you know, sucks. Or, I mean, they sometimes will get very kind of vocal in their outrage. And the truth of the matter is that if we didn't have the clout that we had inside of the community, where the VP of sales knows that we're either moving product for them because they've gotten a positive reviews on the site, or we're costing them because people are posting negative comments about them. It wouldn't be, you know, if it was just my personal blog and nobody read it, nobody would care. But the fact that we're actually kind of moving the needle for companies one way or another makes them care a great deal. So anyway, so that was why I started the site. Now, at about the same time, I, you know, was looking to do some other kinds of things and invested in some technology startups, and I now work with technology startups, and, you know, so I in effect have a day job. But the kind of micropreneur or solopreneur part of what I do has expanded a great deal since those days, in that we do have products that we now sell. We have select partners that we now allow to appear on the site.
I keep saying we, Jeff. Who's we?
Well, I say we just because I have a staff. And so the business actually started making money. I mean, first of all, I didn't know what I was doing. And fortunately, Yaro, as I mentioned just before we kind of started talking, I have purchased a number of your products. So, you know, that taught me a fair amount, and I learned a fair amount in other ways and on my own. So I kind of had a feeling, look, you know, I have this community. I'm getting, you know, 50,000 page views a month, and it's not massively huge, but I'm in a very, very kind of desirable niche. When most people approach medicine, what they will try and do is approach it from the patient side to try and aggregate patients, and then they want to sell those patients, in effect, to physicians, you know, or dentists or whatever. So they will build a site about diabetes. They will try and get a lot of people on their list, and then they will try and make revenue by either selling the patient's information or selling the patient's information to physicians as leads or some other kind of a thing. Now, there's no barrier to entry to that way, and it's very, you know, it's an easier thing to do because there's a lot of content out there that I can just kind of go and find and build, but it's not a real business. Meaning, from my point of view, I want to have something that's an asset that can be protected and that, you know, can't be duplicated and some other things. And so I approached it from exactly the opposite end of the spectrum, which is said, I'm going to, you know, the place that I want to attack is I want to own the value, which is the physician's thoughts, meaning, you know, their top of mind awareness, where they are, because that's where, that's who is going to be spending the money in kind of this vertical niche. You know, now I wasn't making any, the blog doesn't charge. It's not a traditional membership site in that membership is free. What we in effect do in order to drive revenue is we provide a tremendous amount of value, and then we take on partners that have even more value, and they charge, for their products and services. And for some of those, we're really, you know, kind of a perfect niche. Other things that we thought were going to work have not. And once the site started making money, I know a fair amount now about outsourcing and about other kinds of things. So I have
I'll stop you, Jeff, before you keep building this story. The website is called what's the address? MedicalSpaMD.
Yeah, MedicalSpaMD.
.com.
Okay.
Now, it started as a blog. It grew into a community site, which I presume. But when you say that, did you add a forum to it? What's the community aspect?
Yes, so there were a couple things that happened. First of all, I made some, over the years. In effect, I started and I thought, I'll put some advertising on there. So I had a Yahoo AdWords thing running, and I would make maybe $200 or $300 a month with that. We were getting a fair amount of traction, and so I added forums and kind of broke those apart, and things kind of started adding up just a little bit. And then I switched to Google AdWords, and immediately I went from about $200 or $300 a month to making north of just around $1,000 a month. And the only thing that I had changed was that I had switched from Yahoo to Google. Now, I was with Yahoo initially just to irritate my brother-in-law who works for Google, to be honest. but then I realized, this is now, it's kind of paying for itself. There's other opportunities here. And I was getting a tremendous number of incoming requests that I couldn't respond to, like meaning what? That, partner solicitations. Okay. We have a product, we'd like to get on your site. And, I was working with a day job. So I work in, not offline businesses, but technology businesses. So these are businesses that are Silicon Valley startups. You can kind of think of them that way. I didn't have a...
So your 9-to-5 job is...
Yeah, and it's more like, So I do kind of technology startups.
Okay,
it's like incoming deal flow, in effect, by partners that are approaching me and saying, we want to advertise on your site, or we'd like to do will you post about us, and I just didn't have time to do that. And so I said, I'm going to bite the bullet. And so I hired my first staff member, who is still with me. You've talked to Lori. And so Lori's in California, and I kind of brought her on board. And since that time, we've kind of grown to where I now have, because we've expanded past this one site, because to be honest, the content that we put on this site is so niche and narrowly focused that in effect, I have to basically write it. I can't, outsource it. I can't, but the community, we now have about 20,000 comments on the site. The community provides a huge amount of value. That was something that, I learned was a huge benefit, is if you could engage the community where they were actually not only receiving a tremendous amount of value, but they would actually provide the value as well. So we have very, very kind of, if you go on the site and do searches and find comments, I have one post that I did. It has more than it's got more than 1,000 comments. And that kind of, and these are not comments like, hey, great post. Okay, we're all familiar with that. These are missives. I mean, there's comments on there that are, 1,000, 2,000 words that detail, here's how to do this procedure. Here's my experience with this head from this one certain IPL. Here's how to rebuild this part. Here's where to buy this kind of, these are not things that you can necessarily find, very kind of niche. And if you're looking for information about cosmetic medicine and around technology, we in effect became the default single source where you could go online and kind of have some sense of trust that you're not just being pitched to by one of the manufacturers, right? And so these incoming deals that I was kind of getting, I didn't really have time to, you know, respond to them or anything. And I knew that I was losing revenue and I knew I was going to have to bite the bullet. So I basically, you know, hired one full-time employee. And that was a big inflection point for this business. Because now I had somebody that I trusted, and we, you know, there's a fair amount of kind of, you know, I didn't go completely outsource. Although I have employees now in India and the Philippines, my first, you know, forays were in effect kind of local, so that I knew I had some kind of confidence in, you know, the English ability and the kind of personnel. Personnel or those types of things that I knew that real business could kind of get done, because most of these businesses that were approaching us were US-based businesses, right? And this was not going to be conversations that were taking place via email and some other things. And that was a big inflection point, because we immediately started getting traction, and I didn't have to field every phone call and some other things. We could have a conversation every day at the end of the day and say, here's the stuff that I've learned. Here's the stuff that I want you to do. And here's the where this deal is right now. And here is how I want you to position this deal and what I want you to say. And this is what, and most importantly, when you're dealing in this kind of an environment where you're kind of negotiating through somebody, which is in effect what I was doing, what I want the recipient to understand. This is our position, but the way that I want you to talk about this is what this other partner should understand about what it is that we're doing. And we said no, to be honest. We still say no probably 98% of the time. I get we have a selection where you can kind of go in and contact us and apply to become a select partner and stuff. And we get 2 or 3 a week. And I think we have maybe 8 partners total or something like that now.
And what do the partners receive?
Well, the partners receive... they receive a couple of things. So we built this as it's a little bit novel in that all of our partners are in effect kind of brick and mortar businesses. They're not just selling information products or other things. Some of our partners do really pretty well, you know, in the millions of dollars in retail sales over the course of a year, and they receive space on our site. You know, we in effect vouch for them. I mean, because the way that this typically works is if I'm a physician and, you know, I am buying a product, I'm just a lonely physician and I'm only buying $5,000 or $10,000 of product a year. The rep that I'm dealing with, he's got another 200 physicians he's talking to. I don't have any real recourse if something goes bad. I don't have any buying power. And so what we do is we take our entire community and we aggregate the buying power. So it's free to join. So as you join that, we demand from our select partners pricing. So their pricing is lower than you can buy by yourself, and exemplary customer service, because
for medical equipment.
So medical equipment, we have partners that sell things like injectables. So in pharmacies, or they sell training, or they run conferences, or they have
like
subscription
a club almost.
It's a little bit like a discount club, but it's much more than that, in that everybody has recourse. So as a physician, now I've joined Medical Spa MD. Now I have, not only do I have pricing power, okay, but I also have a venue that I have the microphone, right? Because if you are a physician and you buy something from Medical Spa MD, a select partner, and you don't like it, or they, you know, don't carry their end of the bargain, not only can you go and post that on the site, which I don't like, but you can send me an email, because I've said these are the guys that you should be buying from, and I don't like that. And so over the course of, you know, we've been probably doing this for more than 2 years now, we've probably kicked 4 or 5 select partners off of the site because they weren't kind of upholding their end of the bargain. Does that make sense? So as a physician, it's just like a no-lose scenario that way. You know, not only am I getting this discount on the services, but instead of going from a peon discount guy, now I'm right at the top of where they want their customer service to be. Because I'm aware, because we talk to our partners, you know, we talk to our partners probably pretty often, once every other week at least. And they're all aware that if this is a medical spy MD member, this came in through that phone number or whatever, that these guys get the, you know, kind of white glove treatments, which is pretty nice for a physician. And so, you know, we end up with something that's a pretty, you know, a workable model in that way.
It's a nice sort of transparent credibility mechanism that the crowd determines what to trust. And you can get out.
Well, and they, yeah, because they will then go and post, and they will say either I had a very good experience or I didn't have a good experience. And, you know, then we will, not only can they go to the company, but they can go, in effect, to us as well as the community. And the companies are very, very aware of this. Now, like I said, I've been sued a couple times. They're very aware that having negative press on the site, and this is not something you can just... You know, if nobody's going to your site, nobody cares, to be honest. So you have to have, before you can put something into operation on this kind of a level, you have to have a certain kind of traction inside the community. You have to be driving the right kind of traffic, and people have to be hearing about you a fair amount in order to kind of do that. But that has also kind of led to a number of other businesses, in effect. And so the most recent one is that we're breaking out of just the kind of cosmetic area, and we've launched a site. We launched it in November 17th of last year, 2010, called freelancemd.com. And this site is for all physicians and deals with lifestyle issues. So everything other than the clinical practice of medicine. So things around, okay, how you're going to negotiate, how you're going to invest your money, how you're going to manage your assets, how you're going to build additional revenue streams outside of your clinical practice, whether you want to leave clinical practice. You know, what kind of jobs are available to a physician that wants to leave medicine, which there are a growing number of. And I have a partner in that business, a physician who's an emergency med physician who was running conferences for exactly this kind of stuff. He does wilderness medicine and what's called adventure medicine. So if you're going to the, you know, jungles of Borneo and you're going to be gone for 3 months and you're taking a physician along, he's one of these guys that you want to take along, kind of a thing. So it's kind of this kind of a little bit more fun. And so the appeal to physicians now is, I said, look, you know, we've had success here, but this success is entirely replicable to a broader field. So we've assembled on FreelanceMD. We have about 20 physician authors right now, and these include, you know, Harvard University professors, authors, filmmakers, you know, people that are using or are experts in medicine lifestyles. Meaning not the day-to-day grind of digging ditches of medicine, but things around, okay, how am I going to build wealth, or how am I going to scale myself, or what kinds of things, opportunities are available to me. And to be honest, that site is doing much better than I ever even hoped, you know. So we'll see where that kind of goes.
All right. Now, but we're getting towards the end of the interview here, Jeff. There's a few things I'd just like you to share with us before we do wrap up. In terms of revenue streams, I kind of understand what you're doing, but maybe you could break down a little bit more about you know, how your whole online platform derives revenue, and what do all your staff do? Because it sounds like you've got more now than just one full-time employee as well.
Yeah, so I have one full-time U.S. employee. I have had others, but have ended our relationship with the others. Then I have a staff of five in the Philippines, and then I have one full-time developer in India. And they kind of range. They are kind of segmented. But, I have a system in which I use if you're familiar with product kind of management systems, you know, or project management software. Like a Basecamp. I'm using Active Colab is what I'm using, but like a Basecamp. So what I did was I was triggered on actually through one of your blog posts onto the to some other kind of outsourcing things. And while I understood exactly what they were doing, and that's incredibly beneficial probably to a number of people, I knew that I was going to have to actually build my own. Because what we're doing is things that are in some ways typical. So we're writing articles in some things or formatting or reaching out to people. And in other ways, we're kind of, you know, doing complex negotiations that I, in effect, don't have time to do. And so I've built basically modules about, okay, here's how we're going to do this. And so for my outsourcers, not my domestic, but my international outsourcing team, they basically go through an entire training module that says, here's how our businesses work. This is the range of businesses. Here's the number of sites that we have. Here's the logins and passwords. And so they are then assigned to a module that I've kind of created. And this is typically through screencasts as well as kind of written, and has a task list. And it might be, okay, we're going, you know, Facebook marketing we do. You know, kind of Twitter marketing, although I'm less of a fan of Twitter than I am of some of the other social networks, LinkedIn, you know, groups, and how we're going to approach individual physicians to alert them around about our products, and then how that's going to happen once we have an incoming lead of some sort. Because the way that I manage these businesses, these online businesses, is we just provide a huge amount of value that's readily apparent. Once you're inside the space, you can understand where the value is, because there's, you know, whether you're making a decision or we're helping you to not make a decision, these are expensive things. If I'm saving you $100,000 because you're not buying a certain IPL or cosmetic laser, that has a super amount of value, because there's only three things that physicians in this space kind of want to know: what to buy, how to, you know, how to learn how to do something, and how to kind of get more patients. Those are the kinds of three things. Mm-hmm. And so we derive revenue basically through partner agreements. Some of the products we build ourselves, and so I have some other ancillary businesses that are not necessarily specific, but are technology platforms or such. For example, I have a business called Front Desk SEO, and you can see that at frontdeskseo.com. And that is a technology play that provides a front and a kind of a back end for people who are doing SEO for their own site, and especially for things that you're outsourcing.
Specifically for doctors, though?
It's not specifically for physicians, although we do, you know, I'd say probably 50% of our clients with that business are physicians, and it really is just because, okay, I already have this kind of target market that we will talk about to physicians in that space. But it's all kind of it's a universal thing, but because we have physicians, we do kind of market it to them too. But anybody in effect can use it. And what happens is you go online, and we have it's a pretty sophisticated back end where we go out and we will find, based on what your keywords are, you know, backlinks so that you're doing directory listings and blog commenting and, you know, find forums for you in order to raise your search rankings over a period of time. And it's a subscription model. You know, so that is just one kind of example of the businesses that we build that might kind of tie in, but they're also open-ended. It doesn't matter if you're a restaurant or if you're a oil change. If you're a small business, this has applicability to you. And, of course, then we provide the outsource services for that too. So we do have additional outsource employees, so that when somebody comes and says, okay, this is what I want to have happen, but I don't want to do it ourselves. Front Desk SEO, it originally was initiated so that your front desk staff, meaning your receptionist and stuff, if she is just she or he is sitting there with nothing to do, they can do your internet marketing for them, for you. They log in and they're provided a set of tasks. These are not by rote. These are based upon, you know, the keywords that you're targeting in the local area that you're targeting. These are for small brick and mortar businesses, and they can actually be doing your online marketing in their kind of downtime. Now, not everybody wants to necessarily do that. And so we do get a fair number of clients that say, okay, you know, we want you to do all of that, and we charge them more. And then we have actually people that kind of go online and do that. But one of the things that I have found, and, you know, there's a saying in How to Make Money Online, which is the money is in the list, is that the community, you know, the relationship that you have with the community is really where the value is. If you can make the needle move by making a recommendation, and that's, you know, why you have lists and things in the first place, then you've got an asset that can kind of, you know, be leveraged into to a reasonable amount of income. And
in your case, what's the total value of the business? Like, what's your turnover? If you're comfortable stating.
Well, one of our, you know, I probably won't go through the entire rigmarole, but one of our
ballpark figure, so I can see
one of our businesses last year did $1.8 million.
Is that the online one or?
Yeah, so these are online businesses. Okay. So these are and fortunately that provides a system that allows you to, once you're making money, you can then scale and actually spend money. So you're not worried necessarily about, you know, taking on the additional risks of outsourced employees and stuff. And it allows you to spend your time on working on the business once you kind of get your head above the clouds. Now I had, you know, you're aware that is not, normal income. And one of the meaning that even if you're doing online, that's pretty decent. And especially if you're doing it part-time, online and you have basically employees that are doing almost all of the work, that's pretty good. And the reason that I think that that is achievable is the way that I approach online businesses is as a real business where, you know, we're actually dealing much more with taking brick and mortar businesses, and driving revenue to brick and mortar businesses that are actually dependent upon revenue. So as an example, Front Desk SEO is an online business. Everything takes place online, but the benefit to the business is somebody is actually doing a search or something else, and they are walking through the door in order to buy something. And I have found that that is as a brick and mortar business for a client has a client for a brick and mortar business has more value than a client for an online business. Typically because they kind of capture those people and they're selling them stuff that is, you know, delivered in some kind of a way. And they're willing not only to pay more, but they are driving more revenue than it's possible to really do online, except if you're doing some kind of expensive membership site or something per person.
Okay, so Jeff, I think I'd like to wrap it up. We're almost getting to an hour for this interview with one question, really, probably the most important one for everyone listening to this. For a lot of people, they're brand new at this. You sound like you've got lots of different sort of businesses running, all derived, perhaps you could correct me if I'm wrong, but initially from this community that you've built. Like you've sort of extended and added new components to it, but always making sure the community is the driver and being fed lots of value. But going back to when you first started this, when you were the only writer and, you know, not so many people were using the site, what was it that allowed you to build this community? Like, how did you get the traffic and what was the key to the success right back at the start then?
Well, there's two things. One was that I was not building the community in order to try and drive revenue from it. And so I was able to operate outside of the kind of normal strictures that happen if this is you're trying to kind of replace your income immediately. So there's a couple of things. One is that the market that I was addressing was very, very large, not as a number of people, but as a dollar amount. The market cap inside of the market that I wanted to address was a big market, meaning cosmetic medicine or medicine in general. The other thing was that I was saying things that because I had a lot of domain experience, because I have, you know, opened 7 clinics and I have talked to hundreds of physicians and I've talked at conferences, I had a huge amount of domain experience. And because I was not deriving revenue in the traditional manner, which was advertising and that kind of thing, I could say things that other people weren't saying. And so it didn't matter to me because I wasn't deriving revenue from them anyway. I just wanted to have a good reputation and really kind of, you know, you say it the way that it was. Now, that's led to other problems, but those have been overshadowed by the successes, I would say. And the third thing was I just kind of kept at it over a period of time. I think that you know, this is a little bit like compounding interest, that it is very, very, this is like farming and not hunting. This is not something, meaning building a reputation, driving a lot of traffic, this is not something where you can kind of go and without a huge input in, you know, spend to drive a lot of traffic. You know, I have listened to all of your stuff and took a tremendous amount of value around that. So, you know, pillar content and in membership sites and some other kinds of things. And I'm still kind of debating whether to kind of start some more traditional membership sites, maybe. But I think those kinds of three things was that, you know, pressure over time allowed us to kind of incrementally achieve a certain level. Now, there is kind of a tipping point that you reach, and maybe it's your first lawsuit. I don't know exactly what it is. Where,
let's hope that's not
it. you'll kind of find out, especially if you're in a larger market, where people have heard about you a number of times, and now the solicitations for partnerships or agreements or, you know, we'd like to be included in your outgoing membership list because we think that this is going to be good for us. Those kinds of things kind of they'll start to trickle in, and then they will become significant. And it's probably at that point that you have the potential, if you do things right, in order to kind of turn it on into a real business in some ways. I mean, you know, I was always fortunate in the fact that I didn't need the revenue. And so it didn't matter to me that much when, you know, if I was making an extra $200 and I did that for, you know, like 6 years of this, because I didn't know quite enough about how I was going to really monetize this and keep the community kind of intact and not become just another kind of Me Too product. So I don't know if that answers exactly what you were hoping for, Yaro, but that's kind of my best shot at.
Fundamentally, I think it does. Practically, I'm sure there's so many little things you did along the way that we could spend another 2 hours looking at just the online marketing techniques you use, but haven't got time for that, Jeff.
Well, and let me just add one other thing, which is the outsource component of what it is that you're doing. Almost anything that you're doing, if you're going to do it at scale, is going to involve multiple people. In technology startups, if you're looking at a real kind of company, one of the first things that you look at if you're looking is who's the team that is kind of surrounded this. And I kind of occasionally bump into people that are, you know, doing online money-making businesses of some sort. And typically they have a very kind of unfocused relationship with their outsourced team. They might have one person or two people, or they might be exclusively using Elance or Odesk or something else as a kind of a term thing. If you're going to run a business, you're actually going to kind of have to run a real business. And that involves some of the headaches of actually kind of managing people kind of day to day and stuff. And that's one of the things that I ran into. And so I built an entire kind of system so that I did not have to train people one after the other kind of a thing.
Awesome.
So,
okay, Jeff, thank you so much for that. One more time, websites to check out your work and see this empire you've built.
Well, there's probably a couple. If you're a physician, I'd invite you over to Medical Spa MD or freelancemd.com. These are both sites for physicians anywhere in the world. We have physicians all around the world. If you're looking for some other sites that we derive revenue from, as an example, I would point you to frontdeskseo.com. We now have a print-on-demand site called printmd.net, and that's probably a good amount for this.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Yaro.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jeff Barson. If you're looking to listen to some more fantastic interviews with experts on internet marketing, business, personal development, and blogging, please visit my blog. It's at entrepreneurs-journey.com, or you can just Google my name, which is Yaro, Y-A-R-O, and you'll find the blog that way. And you can find more podcasts in the audio tab at the site, or the podcast tab. And there's a huge collection there of over 60 interviews with experts that you can download 100% for free. Once again, I hope you enjoyed that interview. I look forward to talking to you again on a future call. This is Yaro Starek. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.